Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT presents Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat.
Booger, up and in! With 2 seconds left, Notre Dame leads!
Malpas again, backhands, he scores!
Down to the corner, Jablonski, three is good!
Andrew steps in, he's going to throw deep for T.Y., he's got it!
Flips to Jenkins, three for the win, it's good! Villanova wins it!
He dives, it is a touchdown! New England wins!
Adios! Cubs win their ninth in a row!
Miles Boykin is in the end zone!
The Irish have come back!
Your hosts are Eric Hansen and Darren Pritchett.
Welcome to Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat from Michiana Sports Leader, 96.1 WSBT. On this, gosh, I almost forgot what day it is. This is our Wednesday, isn't it? No, it's Tuesday. Eric, I don't know what day it is. I'm a mess right now. The problem is I was sent a log for today. It's for tomorrow. So now, Eric, I don't know what day it is. Is Christmas tomorrow?
It is Christmas tomorrow.
Good. Sports Beat brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. By Goshen Heart and Vascular. Be your hero. Your heart deserves. Visit GoshenHeartAndVascular.org. By Blackthorn Golf Club and by Lavitt Insurance, the agency that rocks. See why at LavittInsurance.com. Eric Hansen, Darren Pritchett with you on this Tuesday evening. And coming up on the program, more on the Blue Goal game. We're going to focus on the wide receiver position coming up in a couple of moments. At the bottom of this hour, Scott Wright will join us. He is the creator of DraftCountdown.com. We've had him on the program for years. Eric has used him a lot for articles in the South Bend Tribune. He will join us tonight at the bottom of the hour to focus on Notre Dame prospects in the NFL draft, including whether he believes two offensive linemen from Notre Dame will go in the first round on Thursday. You can hear the first round of the draft right here on WSBT Radio. Also coming up, we may or may not have a My 5 question of the day today. We'll decide, just depending on some things we want to get to. We also have some recruiting news we want to pass along. And then the top of next hour, the new Mishawaka football coach, Keith Kinder, will join Sean Stiers for a conversation about his new position taking over for Bart Curtis. We were reporting yesterday Keith was going to get the job. It was announced today at 1 o'clock. So the voice of the caveman, Sean Stiers, will speak with the new Mishawaka football coach, Keith Kinder, coming up 1 hour from right now. We have rapid fire, and I have a feeling we'll mix in a little baseball conversation as well. And we can tell you earlier today, there was doubleheader baseball from Bowling Green Ballpark in Bowling Green, Kentucky, and South Bend lost both games of the doubleheader. The first game, scheduled for 7 innings, went into extra innings, and Eric, the new rules went into place in minor league baseball where in extra innings, you put a runner on second base with nobody out, and the Cubs bunted over the runner to third, then a strikeout and a ground out. They did not score. Bowling Green would score in the bottom of the eighth inning to win the game over South Bend by a score of 2-1. But Cub fans, you got a really interesting prospect in Corey Abbott. And he threw 7 innings today, 2 hits, an earned run, no walks, 6 strikeouts. He's got a 2.12 ERA through 3 starts. He has been very impressive so far, along with Ricky Tyler Thomas. They have been the two most impressive starters so far that South Bend has put on the field. And the Cubs in game one today would only collect 4 base hits, and they lost 2-1. Game number two did not turn out well at all. As one of the best prospects in the Cubs system, Jose Alberto struggled once again for a third consecutive outing. He's considered the number three prospect in the Cubs system, only 19 years old, out of Mexico. And today, in game two, which was a 9-2 loss, Alberto's 1 inning, 4 hits, 8 runs, 4 walks, 2 strikeouts, and in that game, 51 pitches, only 24 strikes. So this top prospect, through 3 starts in the Midwest League, has a 27.00 earned run average. So it has been a struggle for Alberto's, the number three prospect in the Cubs system so far. And there were some errors that did not help the cause either. South Bend has committed a lot of errors lately, 3 in game two, and Bowling Green sweeps the doubleheader with a 9-2 victory in game two this afternoon. So the Cubs are now 7-9 on the season. Their offense is struggling, and the pitching has been really hit and miss so far. And with the fielding being an issue, they got some work to do here to get back on track. So the Cubs swept in a doubleheader today. They will take on Bowling Green once again tomorrow night at 7:35. And then game four of the series is coming up Thursday at 11:35. So that's some news surrounding the South Bend Cubs. Not great news from Bowling Green, Kentucky today. Eric, we are going to talk more about the Blue Gold game, which was Saturday, here on WSBT Radio as we wind down our spring coverage. Of course, we'll continue to focus on Notre Dame football, but we want to take a look at various aspects of the Blue Gold game and what we took away from it. Yesterday, we spent a lot of time talking about the quarterback position, what Brandon Wimbush accomplished this spring and also in the Blue Gold game. And we've mentioned for some time now there needed to be better wide receiver play in order to help Brandon become a better passer. A lot on his plate, but the wide receivers needed to be better this year to help out their quarterback. And if the spring game was any indication, Claypool may have a couple of elite guys to throw the football to. We know about Miles Boykin, 3 catches for 132 and a touchdown. Chase Claypool, 6 catches for 151 and 2 touchdowns, including an 85-yard touchdown catch from Ian Book. Eric, we entered the spring pretty confident that Miles Boykin would be kind of the alpha wide receiver of this group, and you want him to hopefully be one of those players that forces the opposition to bring the safety over for help, which is going to open up the running game and other parts of the passing game. So you want him to be that dominant player, like the play we saw in the Citrus Bowl against LSU. And then there's Claypool, who has the high ceiling, but we have yet to see his play at a very consistent level. Eric, if Chase Claypool becomes the Chase Claypool of the Blue Gold game, how dynamic would this offense be?
Well, given the improved quarterback play and what we assume is going to be a better than average running game, it could really open things up. Because Chase Claypool not only is a very fast receiver, he's just mean and strong, and it creates some matchup problems. Well, again, if you're a team with, let's say, corners that are 5'11", and you got to deal with, you know, Chase Claypool and Miles Boykin, those guys are strong enough, mentally tough enough, tall enough, long enough to win those 50-50 battles. So it makes it really difficult on a defense. And if, again, I mean, Chase was the more productive of the two last year. He was Notre Dame's second leading receiver, but Miles didn't get the opportunities that Chase did. But if Chase can, you know, turn it on and be a consistent force, then it really puts your defensive coordinator in a dilemma. Where are you going to give help in the defense, and what's that going to do to the running game if you are no longer committing a safety as that eighth player in the box, which Brian Kelly thinks people will not do to his team. He thinks he has good enough receivers this year where they will not be able to do that and get away with it.
What has been holding back Chase Claypool, in your opinion? The talent is there. You watch him on the practice field and you say, wow, this guy, if he ever figures it out, he could be really dynamic for this football team. And I know even Coach Kelly has mentioned he was a guy that emotionally sometimes maybe got too revved up for some of those big games.
Yeah, I had a chance to talk to Chase a little bit after the game, and I think they're maybe some of that emotion stuff, but I also think some of it is just simply the mentality. You know, I think that, you know, some people are under the impression that he played different rules in high school. He didn't. British Columbia is the one province in Canada that plays American rules, so he was familiar with the game, but he was so much better than everybody else that he wasn't used to having the foot on the pedal all the way down. You know, he can kind of coast and just dominate over people. And he mentioned, you know, that there are times he's going in practice and he's like, okay, I just ran 5 long patterns. I need a rest. And, you know, at the college level, that doesn't cut it. You know, the great ones don't need a rest at that point. Now, certainly Notre Dame's going to rotate folks in, but Chase is just kind of learning about how to push himself to his limits, and I don't know that it's so much a maturity thing at this point. I think he's kind of getting that. It's just kind of making that a habit. And I think he's at the threshold of whether that's going to happen or not. And I think in August we'll see it either happening or not. And I think then that becomes the end of the discussion. He'll either not get it or he will. My sense is that he will, because I think he wants to be great and he thinks that he can be great. And I think once he gets the habits established and they become habits and not things that he does just in big games to impress people, then I think we're going to see a different player.
Here is Fighting Irish head football coach Brian Kelly talking about Chase Claypool's spring.
Getting his intensity level in the right place and his emotions. He wasn't one of our cool, calm, and collected guys last year, but he's really worked hard on that, and the way he's practiced has allowed him to be much more focused. You know, he'd have the occasional drop last year here or there, maybe in a missed assignment. But since he's found where that optimal zone for him to be when he plays, he's been so much more consistent. And if he continues to trend this way, you know, you've got another big, rangy, physical wide receiver that we can put on the field.
Brian Kelly talking about Chase Claypool again. 6 catches for 151 in the blue goal game. The 85-yard touchdown catch from Ian Book and overpowered an ankle tackle by Sean Crawford to get to the end zone. And also, if I remember correctly, he settled down near the goal line in a zone look and found the seam and went down on his knees and scooped up a low throw for a touchdown. Big day for Chase Claypool. And then there's Miles Boykin, Eric, who had that 64-yard touchdown pass from Brandon Wimbush on Saturday. 3 catches for 132. It's kind of funny. Miles Boykin and Tavon Coney almost had the same storyline in the spring. Nobody kind of spent a lot of extra time talking about them because I think they were living up to expectations, and Miles sure seemed to have a spring that showed everybody on the staff and that team that he is ready to become the number one receiver on this football team.
Yeah, Brian Kelly is very sold on Miles Boykin. And so I think their tendency for us is kind of, with a team that has high expectations, kind of looking for the leaks in the boat and how those are going to get fixed rather than talking about the strong part of the boat. But, you know, just jumping back to Chase for a second, I mentioned this in my analysis on Monday. There's really three guys that are like Chase. Chase, Alize Mack, the tight end, and Dexter Williams, the running back.
Right.
If we hear Brian Kelly talking about traits and learning the traits and getting the traits, they're in trouble. If we're not talking about the traits, the whole offense changes because those guys are such dynamic players. But Miles, still with only 12 catches last year, I still think is the guy that's going to be expected to be the top receiver on this team. But Chase influences that. You know, the better Chase becomes, the more of a nightmare it's going to be to deal with Miles.
Eric Hansen, Darren Pritchett, Sports Beat on WSBT Radio. And then there's old reliable Eric at the wide receiver position, Chris Fink, in the blue goal game, 5 catches for 81. He always seems to be standing by, ready to go when the Irish offense needs him, kind of like Robbie Toma was always kind of hanging around when he got the chance. Every time the ball was thrown his way, Robbie always caught the football and made a play. Is there a bigger role for Chris Fink this fall?
If Chase stays on the outside, then there is. What happened last year, Chris Fink was doing well in the slot, and then they decided to move Chase to the slot to get him on the field with Kevin Stefferson when he came back. So that limited Chris Fink's opportunities. And he only had 6 catches last year, but he looked good every time that he was catching the ball. He's had a really good spring, Darren. I think, again, as long as they don't feel like there's one of these freshmen need to get on the field like Kevin Austin or Braden Lindsey, and Chase moves back to the slot, I think Chris Fink is going to have a significant role in this passing offense.
Would you say, outside of those three, put those three names away for a second, did anybody make a significant move elsewhere on the depth chart at wide receiver during spring practice?
Well, certainly Avery Davis. And again, where do you put him on the depth chart? You know, he's a quarterback, but he's going to play some running back and play some wide receivers. I think he's definitely in the mix, Darren, to be in that rotation. I think you could see him at different spots, whether it's in the slot or whether it's an outside receiver. So I would say he definitely made a move. Jafar Armstrong did, but I think he is making a move more as a running back than he did as a wide receiver. We saw him running a lot with the twos. I think Javon McKinley kind of came out of nowhere to put himself in the mix to kind of be in that second tier of receiver. And I think that Michael Young, you know, was really good last August, was really good in the bowl game, kind of disappeared in the middle last year. I thought he had a strong spring. I thought he had a decent spring game. He dyed his hair blue. And I thought that was a good look for him. But again, some of his playing time will be dependent on where Chase ends up. If Chase is on the outside, it cuts down Michael Young's opportunities a little bit. But I thought as a group that the wide receivers exceeded my expectations. One guy that really, I think, didn't get involved that much was the grad transfer, Freddie Canteen, who got hurt early last year. This is his second year in the program. I'm sure he'll be fired up to play his old school Michigan on September 1st. But he really didn't make a move this spring. And Micah Jones, the early enrolled freshman wide receiver, I don't think Micah made a big move either. But I think everybody else could say, I improved my position with the team.
You know, if you went blue hair for just a couple of days, it would make those famous white glasses just sparkle in the sunshine.
Would it? Okay.
I think your grandkids would be like, Grandpa, you're pretty cool if you went with that particular style.
They already think
style.
I'm cool, but we'll...
Well, that's true.
Well, the thing is, they're going to want to have blue hair, and then I'll have to deal with their parents. So
that's right. Hey, so as we wrap up this conversation, and I ask this knowing Equanimeous St. Brown was a part of the wide receiving core last year. From what you've seen this spring, will this year's unit be better than last year's? And I understand there are a lot of carryover between the two, but Equanimeous being gone, that's a pretty big loss.
Right. What I think this unit will be better, and it is a loss. I mean, and I think it's Equanimeous's loss that he didn't come back, because I think he would have been a better player for it, but that was his decision. He felt like he was ready for the pros, and he'll certainly get his chance probably Friday or Saturday, rather than he's not going to get picked on Thursday. But having said that, I think they're just a better receiving core. They just seem so much more aggressive, and I think they're tested more. I think Notre Dame's corners are better this year, and their safeties are better this year, so they can test those guys and get a feel for how real this improvement was or wasn't. And if they didn't test it, then it's on Notre Dame. But that was one of Brian Kelly's aims going into spring, was testing his weaknesses. Wide receiver was a weakness going into spring. And so I feel better about what we're seeing is true improvement and not a mirage.
Eric Hansen, Fighting Irish Football Insider for the South Bend Tribune. I'm Darren Pritchett, SportsBeat on WSBT Radio. Scott Wright from DraftCountdown.com will join us in 8 or 9 minutes. Let's wrap up this segment, Eric, and focus on Notre Dame football recruiting. They have hit the jackpot once again as a 4-star offensive line recruit has verbally committed to the Fighting Irish. It happened late last night, and it is Andrew Kristofic. So, Eric, it's another get for Brian Kelly and his coaching staff, another offensive lineman. Can you offer a couple of thoughts on Kristofic and why Irish fans should be intrigued by this player?
Well, four commitments in 4 days, that's quite a run. Two of them being offensive linemen, John Olmstead and Andrew Kristofic. He is listed as a 3-star player, and these ratings in the spring when these kids are committing – are getting less and less relevant, because this is no 3-star, and I don't think he'll be a 3-star when all is said and done. His offer list is too good. Clemson, Florida, Georgia, Michigan, Michigan State, Ohio State, Virginia, Wisconsin, among the schools that were really interested in him. He's 6'6", 265 right now. Tom Lemming talked with Tyler about how athletic he is, that he's one of the most athletic tackles in this class. Doesn't have maybe the strength of some of the tackles right now, but he'll get that. He's 6'6", 265. If his hometown and his high school sound familiar, it's because he was a teammate of Phil Jurkovec, the quarterback that's in the current, the 2018 class that'll be here in June, and that's Pine Richland High School in Gibsonia, Pennsylvania. But Tom Lemming thinks he has five-star upside and that this kid is going to hit that. So really tremendous start for Jeff Quinn with these two kids, and Notre Dame is really in the, you know, in the top two or three for a couple other guys that are very highly touted offensive tackles. So very, very good news on the offensive line front for a team coming off the Joe Moore Award winner.
Right. I noticed Tom Lemming, who you guys use a ton, of course, for your stories in the South Bend Tribune and IndyInsider.com. He's a CBS Sports Network recruiting analyst and the first real big recruiting guy. Was in the Blind Side, of course. And I noticed when he talked about Olmstead, the offensive lineman the Irish got earlier this week, that he's more of that power guy. I get the sense that Krzyzewski, I mean, he's physical, but there's a little more flexibility to his game.
Yeah, I mean, when you think about it, I would think about it maybe in the terms of Kramer and Liam Eichenberg.
Okay.
Yeah, that the Kramer is that mauler, and Olmstead is that mauling type of tackle. Not to say that he couldn't play left tackle, but that's kind of what where they are right now in their development. And that Krzyzewski is really more like Liam. He has the length and the athleticism to be able to deal with speed rushers as he gets stronger, if not at Gibsonia, Pennsylvania, then with Matt Bayless once he gets on campus, you know, then he's going to add that dimension and start to evolve into a more of a left tackle prospect.
So Krzyzewski, Olmstead, he had four-star safety Litchfield Ajavan and four-star defensive end Howard Cross. This is a pretty good hot streak for Brian Kelly and his coaching staff. Is that 4 in 4 days?
4 in 4 days, and there may be a couple that are coming here pretty soon as well. So
really?
Yeah, I think they're very well positioned, and we're going to still hear about guys coming in for visits. I think that this class, again, when people were saying, well, they only have three verbal commitments, there were a lot of kids they're in the top two or three with where Notre Dame was well positioned, where they're the favorite and pushing hard. And so I think this, again, you know, it's April 24th, you know, we're still, let me do the math, eight months away from the early signing period and 10 months away from the later signing period. But right now, you have to like where Notre Dame is sitting.
Eric Hansen, Fighting Irish Football Insider for the South Bend Tribune. I'm Darren Pritchett. Read more on recruiting in today's South Bend Tribune and IndyInsider.com. The NFL Draft is coming up on Thursday. There might be two Notre Dame offensive linemen taken in round number one. What are the chances? We will ask the expert coming up next. Scott Wright from DraftCountdown.com will join us to talk all things Fighting Irish and the NFL Draft from 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Welcome back to Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat from 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader, your home of the Fighting Irish, along with Eric Hansen, the Fighting Irish Football Insider. For the South Bend Tribune, I'm Darren Pritchett. It is great to have back on the program Scott Wright, the creator of DraftCountdown.com. We've talked to Scott for years. I know Eric has used Scott of the South Bend Tribune for articles on Notre Dame players getting set for the NFL Draft. And it is finally draft week, and there is a good chance two Irish go in the first round. We have not talked about that in a while. So let's bring Scott into the program. Scott, it's Darren. Good to talk to you as always. How are you today?
I'm doing excellent, guys. Good to be back.
Good to be back with you. Let's start with Quentin Nelson. And it's always an interesting conversation, Scott, when it comes to an offensive guard, his value, and is an offensive guard worth a first-round pick, let alone a top-10 pick like could be the case for Quentin Nelson. If you were a member of a front office in the National Football League, considering Quentin Nelson's tape and his abilities, how strongly would you consider him if you picked in the top 10?
I think he's worthy of a top 10 overall pick. He's actually my number one player this entire draft, regardless of position. Quentin Nelson is the best true offensive guard prospect I've seen in the 20 years I've been covering the draft. he is the total package, and I'd be willing to bet he's on the top 3 to 5 overall of just about every board around the league. He just might get pushed down because we're going to have this early run on quarterbacks and then the positional value, but I think his floor is probably the Bears at number 8 overall, and I think he's in the conversation as early as the Broncos at number 5. So, terrific player, and I'm really stingy with my elite grade. I only gave it to 2 players this year. One is Nelson, and the second is Saquon Barkley, the running back from Penn State. So he's a pretty special prospect at the position.
Scott, I'll ask you about this is Eric Hansen. I'll ask you about the other lineman in the first round. McGlinchey, you have him as your top-rated tackle. In your last mock that I saw, you had him going to the Vikings at 30. What's maybe the highest he might come off the board on Thursday?
He's got a pretty wide range. I've heard as early as number 10 overall to the Raiders. I think the Bengals at 21 could make some sense. The Patriots, the Vikings, like you mentioned. But the indications I've gotten are that he's more on that fringe of the first round. And to me, he's the clear-cut top tackle in this draft. And it's not that I view him as this elite franchise left tackle. It's just a down year for the top end of the position. And I gave him a first-round grade in my final rankings, which I'm just making live on the site right now. And, you know, I think he's the safest of all these tackles, but I think he's probably going to be maybe the second or third off the board. I think Colton Miller from UCLA is going to be the first tackle selected because he's more athletic and he's going to be a left tackle, even if he's not as polished of a player as McGlinchey.
And, Scott, just to follow up on McGlinchey, is the wide ranging of opinions on McGlinchey have to do with the fact that some people believe he could be a left tackle in the NFL and others believe that he's only going to be a right tackle?
Yeah, I think it's just mostly because they most think he's a right tackle. If teams viewed him as a left tackle prospect, he'd be going in the top 15 overall. I don't think there's any question about that. But I think his struggles on the left side in college, I think he clearly looks better on the right side. So, and right tackle is a very valuable position. And, you know, going back to Quentin Nelson, you talked about positional value. And I actually interviewed Quentin Nelson a couple of months ago, and I asked him about that. I said, you know, people are going to ask, why should they take guard as early as you're going to be selected? And he made the case that, hey, in today's NFL, you have to deal with Aaron Donald, with Fletcher Cox, with Geno Atkins, these terrors on the interior. And you know, the edge pass rushers in football always get the most glory. But if you ask quarterbacks, they hate the pressure up the middle even more than from the outside. So Quentin Nelson, I think he made a pretty good case why he's worthy of a top 10 overall pick when I asked him.
Scott, you have Equanimeous St. Brown as your 10th wide receiver and Josh Adams as your 12th running back. Do you think there's any chance we would hear either of those guys' names called on Friday in rounds 2 or 3? And which of those kids would have benefited coming back to school more in 2018 had they decided to do that?
I think Equanimeous St. Brown's got the best chance to go on day 2. I think he's going to be a third-round pick, and he's intriguing. I mean, he profiles, at least physically, as a potential number one wide receiver. It's just the poor quarterback play this year really limited him, but he's intriguing. There's no question about that. So I think he's going to go on day 3, or excuse me, in round 3. And he's probably the guy that would benefit the most going back for another year. If he got better quarterback play and put up better numbers, had more opportunities to showcase his talent, I think you could make a case he could have maybe played himself into the first round, at least the conversation. Josh Adams, the big question mark with him is durability. And we saw last year when he was healthy, he was fantastic, but then he got hurt more down late in the year. That's kind of a running theme back to his high school days with the health. So I think that's why he's going to be a middle-round pick. I actually have him in my overall rankings as the very last pick in the 5th round range of my overall rankings. So 4th, 5th round, but he's an intriguing guy. If he can stay healthy and he goes into a situation where he gets an opportunity to be a workhorse, he can outperform his draft slot. We saw last year Kareem Hunt, Alvin Kamara. I think Josh Adams has the talent to do that, but he needs to stay healthy.
Scott Wright from DraftCountdown.com, our guest, talking about Notre Dame prospects and the NFL draft. You follow Notre Dame pretty closely, if I'm not mistaken. You're a fan of the Fighting Irish. So after watching film on this batch of Notre Dame players, is there one player, Scott, that after watching film on them, you were more impressed and maybe gave them more credit than you had initially before starting this particular process for this year?
Well, I mean, the guy that was a revelation this year, he's going to be in next year's class, was Tavon Coney, a guy who came out of nowhere and emerged as a pro prospect. But in terms of this class, Durham Smythe is a good player. I think he's going to be a fifth or a sixth round pick, but I think he's a slightly better prospect than Ben Koyak was coming out, and he stuck around. He was drafted, stuck around a little bit, but nobody really surprised. I think we knew what we were getting. One player, I guess, Niles Morgan. I didn't think he was going to run as well as he did in workouts, and I don't think he's going to be drafted, but I think he's going to be a priority free agent. And you know, he ran, I think, a 4.76, which wasn't an awful time. So I guess that surprised me a little bit, but no huge surprise with Notre Dame. We kind of knew, and you know, Eric, I think we talked back before the season even, and right. We talked about how good of a prospect Quentin Nelson is, and he's one of those no-brainers. He's a real easy guy to scout.
Right. Yeah, Niles also had that shoulder surgery in January, so he had just started running maybe a few days, maybe a week or two before Notre Dame's pro day, cleared to run from his shoulder surgery. So I like him too. I you know, we kind of thought that he had played all year hurt, and he confirmed that, and certainly with the shoulder surgery he did. Curious what you think of Greer Martini, the other kid that started at some linebacker for them last year.
Yeah, and I think he profiles as more of a backup special teamer. I think he's going to be a priority free agent. But another guy who didn't run as poorly as we expected. He ran a 4.81 at 6'3 and a half, 230 pounds. He's got a nice frame. I think he gives you some versatility to maybe play inside or outside. But he'll be in a camp. I think he'll definitely be in a camp, but probably going to have to make it more towards the backup and special teams route.
All right, Scott, so I made this kind of bull prediction about probably 2 months ago to Eric. Now, I didn't expect to be right, and you can obviously throw water on this particular statement since you do this for a living, but I just thought with the red flags surrounding Josh Adams and the injury history and with the way that Durham Smythe plays the game, a complete player, that I said there might be an outside chance when all is said and done that Durham could be drafted before Josh. Now, I think a couple of months ago there might be a round or two difference between the two, but even though if it doesn't happen, I mean, they're almost in kind of a similar ballpark now, right? Fifth, sixth round?
Yeah, they really are, and it's going to be close. And like I said, I have Josh Adams as the very last pick in the fifth round of my overall rankings, and so he was at 137 overall, and then I think I had Smythe coming in about a round later. So I still would give the edge to Josh Adams just because I think there's a lot more upside there, but Durham Smythe, he's safer. You know what you're getting. Probably not a starting tight end, but Durham Smythe is going to play in the league as a backup, whereas with Josh Adams, you're just not sure exactly what you're going to get. But if he hits, you could get a steal.
And let me just ask a quick follow-up question. Just in terms of running backs, there were a couple of years, Scott, where everybody kind of stayed away from running backs early in the draft. Are we starting to see the running back come into fashion? What Gurley has done out with the Rams, that obviously has really helped that franchise. Is this draft, and of course Barkley, everybody loves him, but do you think the running back is becoming more of a value again in the first round compared to a couple of years ago?
Yeah, I think so. And it really did start with Todd Gurley, and then the following year was Ezekiel Elliott, and then this past year was Leonard Fournette. And Saquon Barkley belongs in the conversation with that group. Coming out of college as prospects, I would put him second behind only Fournette. So I think the teams were happy, and they're willing to pay for quality. Although one thing, as someone who follows the draft, that I find interesting is the long-term view of this. I think these teams are going to win in the short run, the first 3, 4, 5 years with these running backs, but for example, the Cowboys took Zeke Elliott over Jalen Ramsey, the stud defensive back with the Jaguars now. They're winning that right now is when Zeke's on the field, but after 5, 6 years, Jalen Ramsey's still going to be an elite corner, and Zeke Elliott's going to be a really expensive running back who might already be starting to wear down. So I wonder how these running backs, these stud running backs, are aging, because right now it's all puppy dogs and ice cream, but 5 years from now it could start looking a little worse.
Now I'm hungry, Scott.
I am too.
I got a couple more for you. One has to do with quarterbacks. One is, you know, we talked last year about Kaiser, you know, making a good business decision because we knew the Josh Allen, Sam Darnold, Josh Rosen group was coming, Baker Mayfield. Now that reality is here, can you project if Kaiser had stayed and had a pretty good year, how he would have fit in with this group?
That's a really good question, and the X Factor is a really good year, you know, yeah. to what degree, but I don't think there's any question he had first-round talent, and I think he would have been in that top six or seven this year. I think he would have been at worst case in a similar range, a top 50 pick. I think you probably lump him in with maybe Mason Rudolph from Oklahoma State, who's going to be the sixth quarterback off the board, late round one, early to mid round two. And I certainly think if he had had an incredible final year and played up to his potential, he could have been a top 10 overall pick potentially. I had him as my top ranked quarterback coming out last year. I didn't love anybody in the class. I don't think I gave a first round grade to any of the quarterbacks in last year's class, but I just, for the value where you could get him and the upside, Kaiser was my preference. And, you know, he's going to get a good opportunity now to have the career he's supposed to, where he can go and sit behind Aaron Rodgers for a couple of years, learn, develop that immense talent, and he's going to have an opportunity to maximize it, whereas going to Cleveland was just really set up to fail.
And you mentioned Coney has, you know, caught your eye and so forth. He's come back. He's moved to middle linebacker. I'm curious, as you look at Notre Dame's roster that isn't in this draft, are there people besides Coney that catch your eye that where you say, next year, these guys could be pretty good?
Sure. Julian Love, the defensive back, is a really good player. But Jerry Tillery kind of intrigues me. And maybe he's going to be the prospect that we thought Jerron Jones could have been. You know, they're similar big body type of jumbo athletes. And Jerron Jones was just, it was missing that X factor. And Jerry Tillery started to turn it on last year. He had some inconsistencies early in his career like Jerron Jones did. But Tillery, the light started to come on last year. So if he can continue developing like that, I absolutely think he has early round potential because big athletic guys like that in the interior, I think he's scheme versatile. He's an intriguing guy for next year from Notre Dame's perspective and maybe their top senior prospect going into the next cycle.
All right, Scott, I've got a couple of rapid-fire questions for you as we wrap up this conversation. We're going to have a mock draft on our program tomorrow, and I think the expectation is that maybe Sam Darnold goes number one to the Cleveland Browns. You're going to have a quarterback run. The Giants are kind of up in the air what they might do. In your estimation, if you're the New York Giants and Darnold is off the board, who do you take at pick number two?
Well, if it were me personally, I'd be taking Josh Rosen, the quarterback from UCLA, but I don't think they're going to be looking quarterback unless Darnold is there. So assuming they make the pick, I think the decision's between Saquon Barkley and Bradley Chubb, the defensive end from NC State, and I think it might be a little closer than a lot of people believe. They really like Bradley Chubb, but ultimately I think Barkley's going to be the guy if they stay, but there's going to be some trade offers, and it's going to take a lot for them to move down. But if they do, then we're going to have an early run on those quarterbacks. And in that scenario, Barkley could even fall out of the top five or six. So a lot of machinations on draft day with these teams jockeying for quarterbacks. And that's what we've seen in recent years. Some teams identify the one they want, and they go get them, cost be damned. Whether it's the Rams and the Eagles a couple years ago with Jared Goff and Carson Wentz. Last year, the Texans with Deshaun Watson and the Chiefs with Patrick Mahomes. And not a one of those teams regret making those moves or paying what they paid. So I think we're going to see a similar phenomenon this year. And I think the two spots where we see quarterbacks and trades are 5 and 6. I think the Broncos at 5 are going to deal out of there, and the Colts at 6 are going to deal out of there. And whether it's the Bills or the Cardinals, I think they're going to come up and get their signal callers. So I think we're going to see 4 quarterbacks off the board in the top 6 overall and maybe 5 in the top 10, which would be crazy. Where quite potentially the record for first-round quarterbacks was 6. That was the famous 1983 class with John Elway, Dan Marino, and we have a chance to tie it this year.
And I was going to ask you about the Colts, so you kind of stole my thunder there. It seems like if Chubb is there, that'd be a perfect fit for them. But just for our Bears fans and our listening audience, at number 8, can you give them a couple of possibilities, and do you feel like Quentin Nelson would be the guy for them?
I mean, Quentin Nelson sure makes a lot of sense for them if he's there from a value and need standpoint and familiarity with Harry Keystand there now. So I think that makes a lot of sense. And if he's gone, defensive back maybe. I've heard them connected to Denzel Ward, the corner from Ohio State, Minka Fitzpatrick from Alabama, or maybe one of the linebackers like Tremaine Edmonds from Virginia Tech or Roquan Smith from from Georgia. But the Colts are interesting. They've already moved down once, and I think they want to keep moving down stockpiling picks. They have a real dearth of talent. They need a lot of help, especially speed and athleticism in that front seven. I think that has to be their priority. If Bradley Chubb, he'd be the dream scenario for them. I don't think he gets to number six. But one way or another, they just need to load up.
Scott, I would have to think Thursday's Christmas Day for you. You work all year for the first round to come about. I mean, I got to imagine you order out. You don't cook. You don't do anything. You sit back as a fan and probably do a lot of work, but you have to order in, right? I mean, you can't be cooking on a day like Thursday.
Oh, no doubt. I totally geek out on draft day.
Good for you.
I enjoy it. I have as much fun as I did 20 years ago when I was a teenager watching. I remember the night before the 1998 NFL draft, I literally did not sleep. That was Peyton Manning and Ryan Leaf and Randy Moss. So I would say it's like the Christmas time for me. And most of the hay is in the barn now. I've got the final rankings. Yeah. Within the next 10 minutes here, all the final rankings are going to be posted. And to work on the final mock draft.
DraftCountdown.com, folks. People, go to it. He does fabulous work, and I still have nightmares. My Broncos taking Ted Gregory over Thurman Thomas. I'm never, ever going to forget that day, that's for sure. Well, Scott, great to catch up with you once again. And, folks, please check out DraftCountdown.com. We've talked to Scott for years. He does an amazing job, and it was great to catch up with you once again on what should be a very, very fun few days for Notre Dame fans watching some pretty good Irish players head to the NFL.
Thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it.
We'll talk to you soon. Scott Wright, DraftCountdown.com, the best website for all of your NFL draft needs. We'll have the draft, the first round for you Thursday here on WSBT Radio. Let's step aside for a second. My five question of the day is coming up next from WSBT. Welcome back to Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat from 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader, home of the Fighting Irish, along with Eric Hansen, the Fighting Irish football insider. For the South Bend Tribune, I'm Darren Pritchett. It is great to have back on the program Scott Wright, the creator of DraftCountdown.com. We've talked to Scott for years. I know Eric has used Scott of the South Bend Tribune for articles on Notre Dame players getting set for the NFL draft, and it is finally draft week, and there is a good chance two Irish go in the first round. We have not talked about that in a while. So let's bring Scott into the program. Scott, it's Darren. Good to talk to you as always. How are you today?
I'm doing excellent, guys. Good to be back.
Good to be back with you. Let's start with Quentin Nelson, and it's always an interesting conversation, Scott, when it comes to an offensive guard, his value, and is an offensive guard worth a first-round pick, let alone a top-10 pick, like could be the case for Quentin Nelson. If you were a member of a front office in the National Football League, considering Quentin Nelson's tape and his abilities, how strongly would you consider him if you picked in the top 10?
I think he's worthy of a top 10 overall pick. He's actually my number one player this entire draft, regardless of position. Quentin Nelson is the best true offensive guard prospect I've seen in the 20 years I've been covering the draft. He is the total package, and I'd be willing to bet he's on the top 3 to 5 overall on just about every board around the league. He just might get pushed down because we're going to have this early run on quarterbacks and then the positional value, but I think his floor is probably the Bears at number 8 overall, and I think he's in the conversation as early as the Broncos at number 5. So, terrific player, and I'm really stingy with my elite grade. I only gave it to 2 players this year. One is Nelson, and the second is Saquon Barkley, the running back from Penn State. So, he's a pretty special prospect at the position.
Scott, I'll ask you about this is Eric Hansen. I'll ask you about the other lineman in the first round. McGlinchey, you have him as your top-rated tackle. In your last mock that I saw, you had him going to the Vikings at 30. What's maybe the highest he might come off the board on Thursday?
He's got a pretty wide range. I've heard as early as number 10 overall to the Raiders. I think the Bengals at 21 could make some sense. The Patriots, the Vikings, like you mentioned. But the indications I've gotten are that he's more on that fringe of the first round. And to me, he's the clear-cut top tackle in this draft. And it's not that I view him as this elite franchise left tackle. It's just a down year for the top end of the position. And I gave him a first-round grade in my final rankings, which I'm just making live on the site right now. And, you know, I think he's the safest of all these tackles, but I think he's probably going to be maybe the second or third off the board. I think Colton Miller from UCLA is going to be the first tackle selected. because he's more athletic and he's going to be a left tackle, even if he's not as polished of a player as McGlinchey.
And Scott, just to follow up on McGlinchey, is the wide ranging of opinions on McGlinchey have to do with the fact that some people believe he could be a left tackle in the NFL and others believe that he's only going to be a right tackle?
Yeah, I think it's just mostly because they most think he's a right tackle. If teams viewed him as a left tackle prospect, he'd be going in the top 15 overall. I don't think there's any question about that. But I think his struggles on the left side in college, I think he clearly looks better on the right side. So, and right tackle is a very valuable position. And, you know, going back to Quentin Nelson, you talked about positional value. And I actually interviewed Quentin Nelson a couple of months ago, and I asked him about that. I said, you know, people are going to ask, why should they take guard as early as you're going to be selected? And he made the case that, hey, in today's NFL, you have to deal with Aaron Donald, with Fletcher Cox, with Geno Atkins, these terrors on the interior. And you know, the edge pass rushers in football always get the most glory. But if you ask quarterbacks, they hate the pressure up the middle even more than from the outside. So Quentin Nelson, I think he made a pretty good case why he's worthy of a top 10 overall pick when I asked him.
Scott, you have Equanimeous St. Brown as your 10th wide receiver, and Josh Adams as your 12th running back. Do you think there's any chance we would hear either of those guys' names called on Friday in rounds 2 or 3? And which of those kids would have benefited coming back to school more in 2018 had they decided to do that?
I think Equanimeous St. Brown's got the best chance to go on day two. I think he's going to be a third-round pick, and he's intriguing. I mean, he profiles, at least physically, as a potential number one wide receiver. It's just the poor quarterback play this year really limited him, but he's intriguing. There's no question about that. So I think he's going to go on day three, in round three, and he's probably the guy that would benefit the most going back for another year. If he got better quarterback play and put up better numbers, had more opportunities to showcase his talent, I think you could make a case he could have maybe played himself into the first round, at least the conversation. Josh Adams, the big question mark with him is durability. And we saw last year when he was healthy, he was fantastic, but then he got hurt more down late in the year. That's kind of a running theme back to his high school days with the health. So I think that's why he's going to be a middle-round pick. I actually have him in my overall rankings as the very last pick in the fifth-round range of my overall rankings. So fourth, fifth round, but he's an intriguing guy. If he can stay healthy and he goes into a situation where he gets an opportunity to be a workhorse, he can outperform his draft slot. We saw last year Kareem Hunt, Alvin Kamara. I think Josh Adams has the talent to do that, but he needs to stay healthy.
Scott Wright from DraftCountdown.com, our guest, talking about Notre Dame prospects and the NFL draft. You follow Notre Dame pretty closely, if I'm not mistaken. You're a fan of the Fighting Irish. So after watching film on this batch of Notre Dame players, is there one player, Scott, that after watching film on them, you were more impressed and maybe gave them more credit than you had initially before starting this particular process for this year?
Well, I mean, the guy that was the revelation this year, he's going to be in next year's class, was Tavon Coney, a guy who came out of nowhere and emerged as a pro prospect. But in terms of this class, Durham Smythe is a good player. I think he's going to be a fifth or a sixth-round pick, but I think he's a slightly better prospect than Ben Koyak was coming out, and he stuck around. He was drafted, stuck around a little bit. But nobody really surprised. I think we knew what we were getting. One player, I guess, Niles Morgan. I didn't think he was going to run as well as he did in workouts. And I don't think he's going to be drafted, but I think he's going to be a priority free agent. And, you know, he ran, a 4.76, which wasn't an awful time. So I guess that surprised me a little bit. But no huge surprise with Notre Dame. We kind of knew. And, you know, Eric, I think we talked back before the season even, and right. We talked about how good of a prospect Quentin Nelson is. And he's one of those no-brainers. He's a real easy guy to scout.
Right. Yeah, Niles also had that shoulder surgery in January, so he had just started running maybe a few days, maybe a week or two before Notre Dame's pro day, cleared to run from his shoulder surgery. So I like him too. I you know, we kind of thought that he had played all year hurt, and he confirmed that, and certainly with the shoulder surgery he did. Curious what you think of Greer Martini, the other kid that started at some linebacker for them last year.
Yeah, and I think he profiles as more of a backup special teamer. I think he's going to be a priority free agent. But Another guy who didn't run as poorly as we expected. He ran a 4.81 at 6'3 and a half, 230 pounds. He's got a nice frame. I think he gives you some versatility to maybe play inside or outside. But he'll be in a camp. I think he'll definitely be in a camp, but probably going to have to make it more towards the backup and special teams route.
All right, Scott, so I made this kind of bull prediction about probably 2 months ago to Eric. Now, I didn't expect to be right, and you can obviously throw water on this particular statement since you do this for a living, but I just thought with the red flags surrounding Josh Adams and the injury history and with the way that Durham Smythe plays the game, a complete player, that I said there might be an outside chance when all is said and done that Durham could be drafted before Josh. Now, I think a couple of months ago there might be a round or two difference between the two, but even though if it doesn't happen, I mean, they're almost in kind of a similar ballpark now, right? Fifth, sixth round?
Yeah, they really are, and it's going to be close. And like I said, I have Josh Adams as the very last pick in the fifth round of my overall rankings, and so he was at 137 overall, and then I think I had Smythe coming in about a round later. So I still would give the edge to Josh Adams just because I think there's a lot more upside there, but Durham Smythe, he's safer. You know what you're getting. Probably not a starting tight end, but Durham Smythe is going to play in the league as a backup, whereas with Josh Adams, you're just not sure exactly what you're going to get. But if he hits, you could get a steal.
And let me just ask a quick follow-up question. Just in terms of running backs, there were a couple of years, Scott, where everybody kind of stayed away from running backs early in the draft. Are we starting to see the running back come into fashion? What Gurley has done out with the Rams, that obviously has really helped that franchise. Is this draft, and of course Barkley, everybody loves him, but do you think the running back is becoming more of a value again in the first round compared to a couple of years ago?
Yeah, I think so. And it really did start with Todd Gurley, and then the following year was Ezekiel Elliott, and then this past year was Leonard Fournette. And Saquon Barkley belongs in the conversation with that group. Coming out of college as prospects, I would put him second behind only Fournette. So I think the teams were happy, and they're willing to pay for quality. Although one thing, as someone who follows the draft, that I find interesting is the long-term view of this. I think these teams are going to win in the short run, the first 3, 4, 5 years with these running backs, but for example, the Cowboys took Zeke Elliott over Jalen Ramsey, the stud defensive back with the Jaguars now. They're winning that right now is when Zeke's on the field, but after 5, 6 years, Jalen Ramsey's still going to be an elite corner, and Zeke Elliott's going to be a really expensive running back who might already be starting to wear down. So I wonder how these running backs, these stud running backs, are aging, because right now it's all puppy dogs and ice cream, but 5 years from now it could start looking a little worse.
Now I'm hungry, Scott.
I am too.
I got a couple more for you. One has to do with quarterbacks. One is, you know, we talked last year about Kaiser, you know, making a good business decision because we knew the Josh Allen, Sam Darnold, Josh Rosen group was coming, Baker Mayfield. Now that that reality is here, can you project if Kaiser had stayed and had a pretty good year, how he would have fit in with this group?
That's a really good question. And the X factor is a really good year, you know, to what degree. But I don't think there's any question he had first-round talent. And I think he would have been in that top 6 or 7 this year. I think he would have been, at worst case, in a similar range, a top 50 pick. I think you probably lump him in with maybe Mason Rudolph from Oklahoma State, who's going to be the sixth quarterback off the board, late round one, early to mid round two. And I certainly think if he had an incredible final year and played up to his potential, he could have been a top 10 overall pick potentially. I had him as my top ranked quarterback coming out last year. I didn't love anybody in the class. I don't think I gave a first round grade to any of the quarterbacks in last year's class, but I just, for the value where you could get him and the upside, Kaiser was my preference. And, you know, he's going to get a good opportunity now to have the career he's supposed to, where he can go and sit behind Aaron Rodgers for a couple of years, learn, develop that immense talent, and he's going to have an opportunity to maximize it, whereas going to Cleveland was just really set up to fail.
And you mentioned Coney has, you know, caught your eye and so forth. He's come back. He's moved to middle linebacker. I'm curious, as you look at Notre Dame's roster that isn't in this draft, are there people besides Coney that catch your eye that where you say, next year, these guys could be pretty good?
Sure, sure. Julian Love, the defensive back, is a really good player. But Jerry Tillery kind of intrigues me, and maybe he's going to be the prospect that we thought Jerron Jones could have been. You know, they're similar big body type of jumbo athletes, and Jerron Jones was just it was missing that X factor. And Jerry Tillery started to turn it on last year. He had some inconsistencies early in his career like Jerron Jones did, but Tillery, the light started to come on last year. So if he can continue developing like that, I absolutely think he has early-round potential because big athletic guys like that in the interior, I think he's scheme versatile. He's an intriguing guy for next year from Notre Dame's perspective and maybe their top senior prospect going into the next cycle.
All right, Scott, I've got a couple of rapid-fire questions for you as we wrap up this conversation. We're going to have a mock draft on our program tomorrow, and I think the expectation is that maybe Sam Darnold goes number one to the Cleveland Browns. You're going to have a quarterback run. The Giants are kind of up in the air what they might do. In your estimation, if you're the New York Giants and Darnold is off the board, who do you take at pick number two?
Well, if it were me personally, I'd be taking Josh Rosen, the quarterback from UCLA, but I don't think they're going to be looking quarterback unless Darnold is there. So assuming they make the pick, I think the decision's between Saquon Barkley and Bradley Chubb, the defensive end from NC State, and I think it might be a little closer than a lot of people believe. They really like Bradley Chubb, but ultimately I think Barkley's going to be the guy if they stay, but there's going to be some trade offers, and it's going to take a lot for them to move down. But if they do, then we're going to have an early run on those quarterbacks. And in that scenario, Barkley could even fall out of the top five or six. So a lot of machinations on draft day with these teams jockeying for quarterbacks. And that's what we've seen in recent years. Teams identify the one they want, and they go get them, cost be damned. Whether it's the Rams and the Eagles a couple years ago with Jared Goff and Carson Wentz. Last year, the Texans with Deshaun Watson and the Chiefs with Patrick Mahomes. And not a one of those teams regret making those moves or paying what they paid. So I think we're going to see a similar phenomenon this year. And I think the two spots where we see quarterbacks and trades are 5 and 6. I think the Broncos at 5 are going to deal out of there, and the Colts at 6 are going to deal out of there. And whether it's the Bills or the Cardinals, I think they're going to come up and get their signal callers. So I think we're going to see 4 quarterbacks off the board of the top 6 overall and maybe 5 of the top 10, which would be crazy. Where quite potentially the record for first-round quarterbacks was 6. That was the famous 1983 class with John Elway, Dan Marino, and we have a chance to tie it this year.
And I was going to ask you about the Colts, so you kind of stole my thunder there. It seems like if Chubb is there, that'd be a perfect fit for them. But just for our Bears fans and our listening audience, at number 8, can you give them a couple of possibilities, and do you feel like Quentin Nelson would be the guy for them?
I mean, Quentin Nelson sure makes a lot of sense for them if he's there from a value and need standpoint and familiarity with Harry Keystand there now. So I think that makes a lot of sense. And if he's gone, defensive back maybe. I've heard them connected to Denzel Ward, the corner from Ohio State, Minka Fitzpatrick from Alabama, or maybe even one of the linebackers like Tremaine Edmonds from Virginia Tech or Roquan Smith from Georgia. But the Colts are interesting. They've already moved down once, and I think they want to keep moving down and stockpiling picks. They have a real dearth of talent. They need a lot of help, especially speed and athleticism in that front seven. I think that has to be their priority. If Bradley Chubb, he'd be the dream scenario for them. I don't think he gets to number 6. But one way or another, they just need to load up.
Scott, I would have to think Thursday's Christmas Day for you. You work all year for the first round to come about. I mean, I got to imagine you order out. You don't cook. You don't do anything. You sit back as a fan and probably do a lot of work, but you have to order in, right? I mean, you can't be cooking on a day like Thursday.
Oh, no doubt. I totally geek out on draft day.
Good for you.
I enjoy it. I have as much fun as I did 20 years ago when I was a teenager watching. I remember the night before the 1998 NFL draft, I literally did not sleep. That was Peyton Manning and Ryan Leaf and Randy Moss. So I would say it's like the Christmas time for me. And most of the hay is in the barn now. I've got the final rankings. Yeah. Within the next 10 minutes here, all the final rankings are going to be posted. And to work on the final mock draft.
DraftCountdown.com, folks. People, go to it. He does fabulous work, and I still have nightmares. My Broncos taking Ted Gregory over Thurman Thomas. I'm never, ever going to forget that day, that's for sure. Well, Scott, great to catch up with you once again. And, folks, please check out DraftCountdown.com. We've talked to Scott for years. He does an amazing job, and it was great to catch up with you once again on what should be a very, very fun few days for Notre Dame fans watching some pretty good Irish players head to the NFL.
Thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it.
We'll talk to you soon. Scott Wright, DraftCountdown.com, the best website for all of your NFL draft needs. We'll have the draft, the first round for you Thursday here on WSBT Radio. Let's step aside for a second. My five question of the day is coming up next from WSBT.
Here's Eric Hansen with what's coming up in tomorrow's South Bend Tribune Sports Section.
Well, Tom Noyes, a busy guy today. He has a column on Patrick Coulter, a former Marion High School football player who was part of the winning team at IU Little 500 last weekend. Tom also covered today's announcement of the new Mishawaka football coach. We have South Bend Cubs doubleheader from today and much, much more.
Very good, Eric. Looking forward to all that in tomorrow's South Bend Tribune Sports Section. And the new Mishawaka football coach, Keith Kinder, will join us to kick off next hour. Sean Stiers, the voice of Mishawaka football, will handle that interview with Keith. So, Caveman fans, a chance to hear from your new head football coach coming up in about 7 minutes here on WSBT Radio. Eric, enjoyed the conversation, really enjoyed the draft talk, and we'll get into more of that tomorrow with a little mock draft. So we shall talk to you tomorrow.
Sounds good.
That's Eric Hansen, the Fighting Irish football insider for the South Bend Tribune. Sean will join me next. It is the top of the hour at WSBT South Bend.
Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT presents Budweiser's weekday sports beat.
Booger, up and in! With 2 seconds left, Notre Dame leads!
Malpas again, backhands, he scores!
Down to the corner, Jablonski, three is good!
Andrew steps in, he's going to throw deep for T.Y., he's got it!
Flips to Jenkins, three for the win, it's good! Villanova wins it!
He tied, it is a touchdown! New England wins!
Adios! Cubs win their 9th in a row!
Miles Boykin is in the end zone!
The Irish have come back!
Here are your hosts, Darren Pritchett and Sean Stiers.
Next hour of Sports Beat underway from 96.1 WSBT, brought to you by Budweiser, Goshen Health System, Blackthorn Golf Club, and Laven Insurance from 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. I'm Darren Pritchett with Sean Stiers. Great to have you with us on this Tuesday evening. And at this point, I'm going to turn the program over to not only the co-host of this hour, but the voice of Mishawaka Cayman football, Sean Stiers, as he has a very special guest all lined up and ready to go. Sean, take it away.
All right. Thank you, Darren. I will talk to you in a little bit when it's rapid fire time. I'll be grilling Darren, of course, as always during rapid fire. But right now, very glad to be joined by the new head coach of the Mishawaka Cavemen, Keith Kinder. And coach, first of all, of course, congratulations.
Thank you, Sean. It's been a long day, really exciting time for me and my family. But thank you, and thanks for all that you do for Mishawaka Athletics.
Well, it's our pleasure. And You kind of touched on this a little bit, just what these last 24 hours or so have been like for, I guess, a little bit more than 24 hours now. Has it completely sunk in, though, that you're the Mishawaka head football coach?
No, it hasn't, and I don't think that it's actually going to until, you know, probably August 17th, right, when we're at Portage High School and we actually take the field. And, you know, there's so much time. You know, Dean Huppert mentioned it today. You know, there's 115 days until we open. It seems like a long time away, and then when you start to think about all the things that need to be done, it seems like a short amount of time. But I don't think it'll actually fully sink in until that night in Portage.
Did you, when Bart Curtis stepped aside, let's kind of go back a little bit. It's been a couple months now since Bart Curtis left to become the head coach down at Warsaw. What were your first thoughts after you found out that he was leaving?
Sad, initially, just because not only has Bart been, you know, a great mentor to me, he's also a close personal friend. So just, you know, realizing that, you know, things were going to change, you know, initially some sadness there. But, you know, then, you know, some excitement about the potential for new possibilities for me, and then excitement for Bart, who has a great opportunity himself at Warsaw. So just, you know, it kind of went the range of emotions those first couple days, yeah, after he stepped aside. But you know, I think everything worked out for the best, and he's where he's supposed to be right now. And you know, I'm really excited about the opportunity that we have here at Mishawaka now.
Did you know right away? How long did it take you to decide that you wanted to put your name in the hat there to try to become the head coach? Was there any hesitation at all?
No, you know, the only thing that, you know, anytime, and you know this, Sean, anytime you make a decision like this, you know, it's not just you that's affected. So, you know, really, I knew instantly that I wanted to do it, but, you know, had some, you know, long conversations with my wife, you know, who has been completely supportive this entire process. But I knew right away that I wanted to apply and that, you know, I thought I was a good candidate for this position.
We're with Keith Kinder, the new head coach of the Mishawaka football team, announced at a press conference earlier today. And I mean, now you're in a situation. I mean, it's not like you're taking over a program that needs rebuilding. You're following a legend, a Hall of Famer, and you always hear people say you want to follow the guy who follows the guy. I mean, what did any of that kind of stuff cross your mind at all?
No, you know, not really. And, you know, all those things are true that you said, but, you know, this is such a good opportunity. It's a great job. So I didn't think about it in terms of, you know, having to be compared with Bart or Coach Aldrich or Coach Smith. You know, I didn't think about it in terms of that. I thought about it in terms of there have been a lot of great people that have led this program before. I would really like the opportunity to also lead this program. So, you know, the comparisons, you know, I think the media like to, you know, make those comparisons and talk about that kind of thing. But to be honest, I'm just excited to be the head football coach at Mishawaka right now. And it doesn't really, you know, it has nothing to do with who was the head coach before or who's going to be the head coach after. You know, we're trying to take this thing that has been handled with great care by several people over the last, you know, half century and push this thing, you know, to even greater heights.
Now, what were you thinking Sunday, Monday? Did you know that you were going to find out, like, at any moment? Did you know that the word was coming down? What kind of things are going through your head?
Yeah, you know, that's one thing that, you know, my wife has, you know, been really great about helping me with. Because, yeah, I didn't know exactly when I would hear, you know, would it have been, you know, last Friday or sometime over the weekend or Monday. So, you know, when the weekend kind of went by, you know, my wife decided, hey, we're going to go see a movie. We're going to go to dinner. You know, got a babysitter for the kids. Just, you know, something to keep my, you know, my mind off of that.
Right.
But yeah, you know, probably that was the most stressful part of the whole process, is just knowing that you could hear any minute. And, you know, realistically, you know, your life is going to change, you know, in a matter of a couple of days, possibly.
That's right.
So yeah, it was really exciting. You know, and again, I just can't tell you how much I'm, you know, honored and ecstatic to be the leader of this program.
Keith Kinder's with us, the new head coach of the Mishawaka football team. I've heard you described, Keith, as an intense competitor, fairly meticulous. How would you describe yourself, your coaching style?
You know, cerebral. You know, I love the part of the game of football where, okay, if we do this, how will they react to that in terms of, you know, X's and O's. I like thinking about those things. As far as, you know, like kid to, you know, coach to kid, you know, I think that I am able to coach several different ways. You know, if I need to, you know, I've got a big voice. If I need to be loud, I can. If I need to, you know, grab a kid, put my arm around his shoulders and, you know, just talk to him one-on-one, I can do that as well. Whoever you talk to that, you know, that said those things about you, those are nice things that I would like to believe are hopefully true.
Well, this is your first football head coaching position. You've been a head baseball coach at the varsity level before. How does that experience help you now for this?
You know, I think the big thing is, you know, just understanding, you know, the communication aspect of being a head coach. I think that one of the things that
you know, head coaches that I've watched throughout my career and even growing up and playing. One of the best head coaches I were around were great communicators with their kids, you know, making sure a kid understood his role, you know, constantly updating kids on where you see them, what you expect from them, you know, that sort of thing, mm-hmm. so that you don't get a kid that feels like he doesn't belong and then becomes, you know, upset or doesn't want to be involved in your program anymore. So, you know, from that aspect, and then having the opportunity for a couple of years just to, you know, deal with some parent concerns, you know, that sort of thing. But I understand completely that this is on a much grander scale, right. At a bigger school. Football at Mishawaka is a really important thing to so many people. So, I don't think that anyone can be 100% prepared for a job like this until you actually do it.
You touched on this a little today at your press conference. Mishawaka, of course, known for its option offense, and you were the offensive coordinator for 5 years. So the option is here to stay then?
100%, no doubt about it.
Any differences, or is it pretty much the Mishawaka triple option as we know it?
Yeah, I think that you can expect to see, you know, similar formations, similar plays. We're going to try to play faster at times just so that we have the capability to do that if we get behind in the fourth quarter and we need to move the ball in a hurry. So we're going to try to no huddle, play up tempo style. Maybe here and there a couple of little wrinkles and, you know, certain plays that we may run. But to be honest with you, it's going to be the same offense that you've seen the past 5 years. Bart was great about allowing the offensive staff autonomy, meaning, you know, we had a lot of say in what happened. So what you saw on Friday nights was a collaboration of a lot of people, not just one person. And I think that will continue on Friday nights in the fall.
I didn't mean to cut you off. Did that come up at all when you were interviewing?
No. Not one time was I asked what offense would I run. I think that, you know, I mentioned it a couple times, you know, just, hey, this is what I believe in, you know, running the football. I think it gives our kids the best chance to win. But I never got the impression that anybody in the interview committee, they were hiring someone specifically because they would run a certain kind of offense or a certain kind of defense or anything like that. I think that they were looking for who they thought would be the best candidate to lead the program. And, you know, thankfully for me, they thought that was me.
Is that the offense you ran when you were the quarterback at Jimtown?
No, it was more, I mean, a lot of similarities. You know, we threw the ball maybe a few more times at Jimtown than Mishawaka does now, maybe, you know, 6 to 8 times a game. It was more of a, you know, a wing and power and trap and belly type of offense, but similar beliefs that, you know, running the football, controlling the clock, keeping your defense off the field, taking care of the football, discipline, 11 guys all, you know, doing their job for success. Like, all of those things are, you know, the same. And so, right. You know, to be honest with you, Sean, it's this is the offense the only offense that I've coached as a professional. At Southern Wells, I actually was looking for a place that I could go that ran this offense and got lucky and got into that job. So for no other reason than it's what I know, it's what I believe in, you know, this offense is working. You know, you see a lot of these teams now with, you know, they get into the gun and they run the, you know, the zone read and the run right. pass option type plays. There's no difference in the flex bone versus that. I mean, they still have similar beliefs. They're reading people. Mm-hmm. They want to take advantage of numbers and things like that. It just looks newer and flashier than what we do. But the same principles apply.
Now, so we know what the identity of Mishawaka's offense is going to be, but under Keith Kinder now, what do you see as the identity of Mishawaka football?
Hard-nosed kids that love to compete. You know, and I think that that's something that we've done a good job of in the past and just something that I want to continue. You know, kids that want to compete, they don't care who the opponent is, They don't care what the scoreboard says. They just love to compete. And we're fortunate to have those kids in our program, and we're going to continue to foster that attitude and that belief that when we, you know, we may be outmatched physically, athletically, all of those things, but when we compete together as one unit, we have a chance to be successful.
Keith Kinder's with us, the head coach, the new head coach of the Mishawaka football program. You said today your first priority was to talk to your team. Did you get a chance to do that this afternoon?
I did. After school, I had a few minutes to speak with them. And really, I just wanted, you know, 5 minutes just to get, you know, the opportunity to get out in front of them. You know, I mentioned this afternoon. You know, there's a lot of anxiety for young people who are invested into a program mm-hmm. like the Mishawaka football program when, you know, they don't know who their head coach is going to be, what, you know, what changes might there be. And so really just I was excited to get in front of them, talk to them, look them in the eyes and tell them I was here for them. I was going to, you know, I told them today, I'm going to give you everything I've got for every single day that I'm in this position. And, you know, I'm expecting the same from you in the fall, that you're going to give us everything you have.
So what's next now? There's 115 days, as we've said, till the season. Do you have a grid kind of plotted out of what's going on over these next 115 days, or maybe more importantly, even just the next couple weeks?
Yeah, I don't have a grid. That's a really good idea. And, you know, maybe my wife can help me out with that.
There you go.
the next thing that I would like to do is, you know, get, you know, sit down with the coaches individually, you know, gauge their interest in continuing to coach, because we have an outstanding staff at Mishawaka High School.
Yeah.
And so, you know, making sure that they understand the expectations that I'm going to have, and also just, you know, maybe there's some spots on the staff that need some shuffling, but any of those guys that want to coach, we're certainly going to have those guys back. And then after that, you know, just trying to get the summer schedule in order and out to the kids as quick as possible, just so that they can, you know, make their vacation plans and, you know, plans for their other sports. You know, we got kids that are in travel baseball, that play basketball. We want to make sure that those kids in the summertime have the opportunity to be involved in all their sports in the summer. So the quicker that I can get those things taken care of, I think the better it'll be for our kids.
All right. Before I let you go, Keith, I'm going to do some word association with you. I'm going to throw a few different people at you. You tell me what comes to mind. All right.
Okay.
You can be as long or as short as you want. It's up to you. Let's start off with the guy you're succeeding, Bart Curtis.
Organized, great mentor, sometimes misunderstood as a surly man, actually has a big heart,
cares
a lot about the people he works with and the people in the community that he is associated with.
All right. Your co-offensive coordinator last year, Kyle Shaw.
Smart. Super smart. There was a lot of times where Kyle stays quiet on a Friday night, but anytime Kyle suggests something, we run it, and it's usually pretty good.
A guy who ran it a lot last year, Mishawaka fullback Chris Harness.
Competitive and fast, and he's getting faster. He is a bowling ball, man, and I'm looking forward to coaching him.
Last year's quarterback, Sam Shively.
Shifty, athletic. A game changer. When the ball's in his hand, there's the potential for good things to happen.
A guy who did a little bit of everything last year, Donovan Snyder.
Exactly what you said, can do anything. Can play defense, can move outside and play some split in if you need him. Really, really athletic and dangerous when the ball gets in his hands.
Other side of the ball, linebacker Derek Dawson.
Competitive, fast, downhill player that's really aggressive.
And one more defensive player, defensive back C.J. Fisher.
Smart. Smartest kid on the back end. You need that at the safety position. A great leader, great communicator. He's going to have to be the heart of our defense next year.
All right, sounds good. Keith Kinder, the new head coach of the Mishawaka football team. Now, I should say, Keith kind of got thrown into the fire once last year. Bart Curtis got really busy when we were trying to get his pregame interview recorded, and Keith pinch hit for him. You didn't know that you were going to have to do this every week from now on, though, did you?
I didn't, but I'll tell you what. If that's the price I have to pay, then I'll do it, man. Thanks a lot for having me. And again, thank you for all you do for local sports in our area and also Mishawaka.
All right. Thanks a lot, and congratulations again. Keith Kinder, thanks a lot, Keith.
All right. See you. Thanks.
All right. Take care. Keith Kinder, the new head coach of the Mishawaka football program, again announced at his press conference earlier today. A lot of good stuff and a lot of good information there. Darren Pritchett is going to join me once again next. It is 6:25, this first hour, or the second hour, rather, of Budweiser's weekday sports beat on 96.1. WSBT, the sports leader.
And welcome back to Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat from WSBT Radio. As we get you set for rapid fire, don't forget to grab your clubs and get spring savings with Blackthorn Golf Club's Blackthorn Cart. Right now, it's available for only $99. What does it get you? Well, 80% off the regular rate to play Blackthorn, including a cart every round, every day, all season long. Also, as a Blackthorn Card member, on Mondays and Tuesdays, you pay just $29 for green fees, and that includes the cart. For more information, call 574-232-GOLF. That's 574-232-GOLF, or visit blackthorngolf.com today. The Blackthorn Card, 80% savings only at blackthorngolf.com. Sean and Darren with you, Sports Beat from 96.1 WSBT. We are brought to you by our good friends at Blackthorn, also by Goshen Health System, Laven Insurance, and our longtime sponsor, Budweiser. And now, at 29 minutes in front of the top of the hour, this is Rapid Fire.
Let's start with the blue gold question, Darren. Okay. Fill in the blank on this one. After watching the spring game Saturday, the biggest question you have about the Fighting Irish for the upcoming season is blank.
Wow. Well, I would say how the running back position will be handled and who are going to get the carries. I think Avery Davis and Farr Armstrong looked really intriguing in the blue gold game as options. Tony Jones Jr. brings a lot of versatility, a little speed, a little power, the ability to catch the football. Dexter Williams has that elusiveness. So the running game's probably going to have a lot of success. It may be done in a little different way than last year with Josh Adams mainly carrying the football for the Fighting Irish. But I'm really interested to see and how they use those four guys and how the carries are split up. It might vary from week to week depending on the matchup. But entering spring, I was like, boy, the depth at running back. How's this all going to work out? Well, the little trial that the coaches did with Davis and Armstrong looks like they made some pretty good decisions. So I guess
definitely, if
there's a concern, I don't know if it's really a concern, but I'm just curious to see how that position pans out.
Yeah, and that's I was going to sort of reemphasize. I didn't use the word concern, just question. So it's it's not like we're pulling our hair out over this thing. Yeah, but we want to see how it's going to work. And we're thinking along the same lines. I mean, because they do lose Josh Adams, who was far and away their leading rusher, and both Williams and Jones were limited last year because of the injuries that they had. So they were never at full strength. And maybe, and again, this isn't a, I don't want to overstate it as a concern, but at the same time, okay, so they had 58 carries, 254 yards Saturday, a 4.4 per carry average. All right, but if you take Williams' 72-yard runaway, then they're down to 182 yards, averaging 3.1 per carry. And now, grain of salt again, because Brandon Wimbush wasn't used as a runner because they wanted him to throw the football, and that's a big part of their run offense, obviously. And, I mean, you can probably even kind of flip it to where if Brandon Wimbush is as good a thrower as he was Saturday, if he can do that over the course of the season, then they probably don't have to lean on the run game quite as much.
And obviously in college, sacks go against the run game.
Yeah, true too.
So that hurt as well. I think, you know, as you look ahead, if there's a concern, can they get enough out of the running game? No, let me start over. Let me rephrase that. Can they get enough out of the passing game to allow the running game to have success? And what I mean is, look at November. Teams took away the running game and dared the Irish to throw the football and beat them in that fashion. And then it became a copycat. Everybody started doing the same thing, and that's when things really got off track for the Irish offense and their playoff hopes went away. So can the passing game do enough to put enough fear in defensive coordinators that they're going to back off that philosophy, and then the Irish would be able to run the ball freely?
At least keep them honest. And just like we said yesterday, if Brandon Wimbush is up there 58-59% like he was Saturday, that's just a huge difference in the way things look every Saturday next fall.
Safeties will be a little farther away from the line of scrimmage.
Yep, absolutely. Okay, another Notre Dame question for you. ESPN says Notre Dame has the third best chance of any team in college football to go undefeated this upcoming season. So, scale of 1 to 10, what chance would you give the Irish to finish without a loss in the regular season?
Oh, boy, that's tough. I mean, I really love this team. I think they have the makings to do some really good things, but we continue to go back to the flow of the schedule. In November, it's going to be very difficult. Just going by the flow of that November schedule, I just don't think undefeated is possible, so I would put it down around a 2.
Yeah, and I mean, when you talk about the flow of that schedule, and again, we've hit it a lot, but I it's pretty important. They go to San Diego, then to Evanston, basically Chicago, South Bend, the Bronx, then to Los Angeles over the last 5 weeks of the season. So I went, and just for fun, I figured out, because we've been talking about how big a factor that can be, that's over 10,000 miles they'll travel in 5 weeks, whereas Clemson travels a little over 7,000 miles over the entire season. Big difference right there. 10,000 miles over the last 5 weeks, Clemson 7,000 for the entire season.
I'm just fearful they lose the USC game in the Bronx.
Yeah, that very well could be when you have to make that jaunt. So I'm maybe a little bit higher. I'm at a 3, but it's just tough. Because if you look at just the teams on the schedule, it's a very manageable schedule. But again, when you're putting that kind of fatigue potentially on your team, hopefully they're well-conditioned, but I don't know. The mental side's going to come into it, too. It's going to be a tough stretch there at the end.
I could see 10-2 right now.
I could, too. Absolutely. Okay. Now, an NFL draft question for you, and I'll let you hear another one of these Mel Kiper Jr. ESPN draft profiles. This one's on Mike McGlinchey. Take a listen.
Mel Kiper Jr. Player profile.
If you look at McGlinchey, huge kid, 6'8", 310-pounder, been out there starting since day one at Notre Dame, was a left tackle this year, had been a right tackle. Now, as a right tackle, he was dominant. At left tackle, he struggled with the quick outside pass rushers. He will be a right tackle in the NFL. He's a professional. Technique is outstanding. He comes ready to play every week. He will be a plug-and-play starter at right tackle as a rookie.
Okay, so there's Mel Kiper's take, and I know you guys talked a little draft in the first hour of the show as well. So the question is, will Mike McGlinchey be picked 12th or higher in the draft, or 13th or later in the draft? Because we expect him to go in the first round Thursday night.
First, I would love to know what Bill Tobin thinks about Mel Kiper's analysis, since they always got along so well back in the day.
Right.
Well, McGlinchey's all over the board, as Scott Wright from Draft Countdown mentioned in the first hour. When I asked him, why is McGlinchey kind of all over the place? Is it because different people look at him in different ways? Some as a left tackle, some as a right tackle. He feels like that is the case. There are a lot of teams that believe he is not a left tackle. I think he has a chance to be a very, very good right tackle. I think at left tackle, it might take him some time. Can he handle that rusher coming off the edge, that dominant guy? But I think he's a right tackle. And if I'm right, which I don't know if I am, I would have to say it would be later than the 13th pick. If he's only a right tackle, maybe he goes 21 to Cincinnati. But I just don't think, in looking at the draft board, that he would go in the top 12. I think that might be a reach. But again, it takes just that one team in need of a tackle. And maybe that one team in the top 12 needs a left tackle, sees Mike as a left tackle. That's all it's going to take. But I think the norm would be he would be later than the 13th pick, because most teams see him as a right tackle.
That's a good point. Throughout most of this draft buildup, he's kind of been, it seems like, around 20th or later in most of the mocks. But I'm seeing him kind of gaining steam here in these last couple of days, with just days to go now. The mocks have him going higher and higher, and some people even have him going before Quentin Nelson due to the whole, just kind of what you were talking about, the whole tackle being the better, you know, the bigger commodity and all that kind of stuff. I still think Nelson's going to go first, but
I do too.
Peter King has McGlinchey going at number 10 to the Raiders, with Nelson going at number 8 to the Bears, which is interesting. And then another mock that I saw has Nelson going number 6 to the Colts, and then McGlinchey going 8 to the Bears. So, depending on which mock you look at, somebody's going to get reunited with Harry Hiestand. But I don't know. It seems like he's gaining steam, barring trades and things like that. I don't think that he's going to go in the top 10. But I think I'm going to say he'll go by pick number 12, because it seems like of the tackles, it's him and the guy from UCLA who are kind of the two who are sort of the cream of the crop right now.
Not to change your subject, but I wouldn't be shocked if 4 of the first 6 picks are not quarterbacks, with Denver and Indianapolis moving out of 5 and 6 for teams like Buffalo and Arizona, who are in desperate need of a quarterback, can get up in there. If those two trade, you're going to see 4 of the top 6 being quarterbacks. I'm assuming Barkley would be one of the two non-quarterbacks taken. I would guess Chubb, the defensive end from NC State, would be the other. So that would leave the door open for Tampa Bay at 7 to have basically the pick of the litter from whoever else is out there, and Quentin Nelson would be in that particular conversation. Mm-hmm. My point is, if my scenario unfolds, there is an outstanding chance Nelson is there for the Bears at number 8.
Yeah, absolutely. And what's interesting, you talk about trades, as the Peter King mock draft, and I think this is the only one he's done. He hasn't done the revisions like everybody else. And Mike Mayock is putting out his one and only mock tomorrow as well. So I'm going to be interested to see how he has things going. But in Peter King's mock that he put out earlier this morning, he had both the Cardinals and the Bills trading up so that they could get those quarterbacks, and he still had McGlinchey going at number 10 to the Raiders.
Really?
So,
well, Arizona has to move up. Yeah. They can't sit at 15 and wait for a quarterback unless Lamar Jackson's their guy.
Yep.
Otherwise, Rosen's going to be gone. Mayfield's going to be gone. All those supposedly are the top-end quarterbacks are going to be gone. I'm not quite sure there's an all-pro in this group. We'll see how it unfolds. Eric stole my question to Scott Wright in the first hour when we had him on the program, but I was curious to know, if DeShone Kizer waited another year, where would he be in this group? And I know he mentioned he might be in that Mason Rudolph group, which is just outside looking into the first round. But if DeShone would have had a big year last year, maybe things are different. I remember last year at this time, we felt like it was a good business decision to go last year, because this year had all these players. I don't know if they all fulfilled their expectations. I feel like they all have a flaw, and there isn't that for sure guy in this group. Darnold seems like the safe guy, but that doesn't mean he's going to be the best guy.
Yeah.
There's a lot of questions about Allen. Is Mayfield too short? Is he going to turn into Johnny Manziel off the field? There's just red flags about each of these guys. So all these teams going all in on quarterbacks, if they miss, it'll set them back 5 years.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And I mean, these last few years, I haven't been overly sold on a lot of these quarterbacks that have gone high. And in the short term, they haven't worked out. But, I mean, man, just look at between Goff and Wentz. They didn't have great rookie seasons, but I don't know what you expect. But they both had really good years last year. So,
well, Jameis Winston doesn't look like an all-pro to me.
Yeah, and that's, you know, but that's also a team, like are they looking at Quentin Nelson or McGlinchey or line help to try to protect him a little bit better, because he gets sacked a lot too?
Sure does.
So, okay, let's shift to some baseball. Javi Baez currently leads the Cubs with 23 RBIs. Now,
how about that?
I know it's, and that's, do you buy or sell him being in the top two for the Cubs in runs driven in at the end of the season?
Well, it's,
it's going to depend on a couple of things. The health of the star players.
Yeah.
Rizzo's had the back. Bryant had that bean ball, and he's going to sit out tonight. He's not quite ready yet since getting hit by a pitch in the helmet in Colorado. I mean, it's hard to imagine Bryant and Rizzo having fewer RBI than Javi Baez. Where does Baez hit in the order throughout the year? Is he going to be a number two? Is he going to end up seventh or eighth? That'll play into it. Mm-hmm. I just think the logical, obvious answer is there's no way he ends up with more RBI than Bryant and Rizzo. And it just doesn't seem like Baez will be in an RBI spot throughout the entire year. He'll either be before the money guys or down bottom of the order. So I just don't see how the RBI pace can continue. It has been impressive the last couple of weeks. There is no doubt about it. But I just wonder, will he be in a spot in the lineup to continue this pace? And you have to figure Bryant and Rizzo are really going to get rolling here anytime soon.
Yep, that's really good points. I mean, he not only leads the Cubs, he's second in all of baseball with his 23 runs driven in. And the 23 are also the most for any Cub in the last 105 years before May 1st. So just on an amazing pace right now. He's had just two full seasons in the big leagues, and the most RBIs, 75 last year. So, but, you know, maybe he's finally starting to find his own. He's striking out every 3.2 at-bats, which is still at his career average. So he's really no different with the strikeouts. It's just that it seems like he's, you know, one, he's moved up in the order. They had to move him up because of the way the lineup was going, and he's taking advantage of the RBI opportunities. Now, I'm going to read you a line here, and I'm interested to see what you say about it, because and I know that you love Joe Maddon quotes. So Joe recently said that once Baez learns to lay off the low and away slider, he's going to be hitting like Manny Ramirez. What do you think about that?
I don't know about Manny Ramirez, but he will be a high-end player.
Yeah.
If he can just settle down in chasing that pitch, if he can swing up more strikes, I don't see any reason why we should put a ceiling on Javi Baez. He has the tremendous glove. He's really good at stopping people from stealing signs, as we saw this weekend, which was interesting. I love that. I thought that was true. Standing in front of DJ LeMahieu, the Royals second baseman, who was on second base as a runner, and Baez felt like he was stealing signs and relaying them to the hitter, so he started standing in front of LeMahieu as the signal is being made. I thought it was terrific. That was great, great stuff, and I know the umpire got a little upset at Baez, but I thought that was great gamesmanship, and I'm really glad he did that, because if you think someone is stealing your sign, absolutely stand in front of the base runner so he can't look in. I thought that was a great reaction, so bravo Javier Baez on that.
That's right. And to answer the question, I never answered the question, I do think Chris Bryant will eventually lead the team, but I'll buy Baez finishing behind him. I think, like you, I think at some point Rizzo will get it together, but we don't know exactly what's going to happen with his back, so if it does bother him, that could be a thing. So I'll say Baez finishes at least second this year.
Okay.
All right. We've got time
for a story.
Do we have time for one more? Or
let's do it.
Do you want a break? Okay. Now, this is another baseball one. Cubs, of course, traded Gleyber Torres for Aroldis Chapman 2 years ago for their World Series run. Well, Kansas City traded recent no-hitter pitcher Sean Manaea for Ben Zobrist the year before in their World Series run. So, should either the Cubs or the Royals feel bad about those deals now?
Absolutely not. Anything you do to improve your team to win a World Series was 100% worth it. So Gleyber Torres, great young player, but you needed that dominant ninth inning guy. Can't blame them. Zobrist did wonders for Kansas City. Do they win the World Series without Ben Zobrist?
No,
you're a Royal fan,
not.
So you can answer it better, but
absolutely
my
not.
Answer is no. He did wonders for that baseball team. So a team should never, ever regret making a trade. Maybe you end up losing the deal in terms of the players, but if you won the World Series, none of it matters. And that's why even though the Jason Hayward contract is an albatross, you have to look at it. He did enough defensively in base running to help them win a World Series. So even though it just looks awful, it was well worth it because they won the World Series in 2016. So absolutely, Torres may turn into an all-star. but they got a World Series ring, and Aroldis Chapman was a big part of it.
I don't think either of those teams, the Royals in 2015 or the Cubs in 2016, get to the World Series without those two guys, without Zobrist for Kansas City. Obviously, that was before he came to Chicago, or Chapman. Chapman had 16 saves that year and another four in the postseason, and yeah, he gave up the lead in Game 7 and all that, but I mean, Joe Maddon obviously had to ride him to get to Game 7, and they definitely don't get to Game 7 without what Chapman does in the first six games of that series. And Zobrist, he didn't have that same kind of impact, but he did have a big impact in the lineup. He really lengthened that Kansas City lineup that was already pretty good and just gave him a veteran presence up toward the top of the order. He had a .365 on base percentage both during the season and in the postseason that year. So I don't think either team wins their championship without those guys that got traded for.
I know I've said this a million times, but since we're talking about this, you probably remember I wasn't a big fan of the Quintana Eloy Jimenez deal just because I am such a believer in what Eloy can be. But I always said I understand why the Cubs did it, to get a cheap, young, under contract starting pitcher. You have to give up a lot. You have to give up a premier prospect, which they did. If the Cubs win the World Series with Quintana, I'll shut up because, as we just talked about, it makes the deal worth it.
Yep.
But from my standpoint, I'll always say this, it is tough to trade Eloy Jimenez, and I can't wait to see a couple of years from now where Jose and Eloy are and how they have helped their teams. I think it'll be an interesting discussion. But again, if the Cubs win it again with Jose, I'll never bring it up again.
Right. Time will tell. That's what we have to wait for. We'll just have to wait and see what happens. But it's an interesting one.
Baseball trades are fun. Baseball trades are always fun when prospects are involved. We will take a timeout as we have wrapped up Rapid Fire. Final segment of the program or so coming up next here on WSBT. Sports Beat tonight from 96.1 WSBT, brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some buds by Blackthorn Golf Club. Goshen Heart and Vascular. Be the hero your heart deserves. Visit GoshenHeartAndVascular.org. And by Lavitt Insurance, the agency that rocks. CY at LavittInsurance.com. We'll have some fun tomorrow in the 5 o'clock hour. We're going to have a mock draft. Sean's going to draft for the New York Jets, so we'll have some fun on tomorrow's program with that. Enjoy your evening.
All right, you as well. Talk to you mañana.
It is the top of the hour at 96.1 WSBT South Bend.